Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. How are you? It is almost the end of October, and here we go with this holiday season once again nipping at our heels. But until then, we will stay in the mood of Halloween. Halloween. Spooky and scary. But to not be spooky and scary, there's another celebration that's going on today, and that is, it's Rashi's birthday. Happy birthday, sis!
You know, I taught the children how to do that. I said, you get choices. Oh, you can clap or you can go, and I have a whole half of a school now who don't clap no more. They just do the African ululation. Anyway, I am so... I don't know, confused. I thought that the turning, when your body turned on you like that, I thought that happened in like 50s, maybe 60s, like you go to sit up and your hips say no.
Yeah.
Or you strike down on that one step, you strike down on that step the wrong way and your knee do the 360 shuffle. And I was like, not 47, not 47, right? Mm-hmm. 74,
mm-hmm.
right? Not 47.
It happens early. Yes,
but
yes,
nobody in their 40s is telling the truth. All the 40-year-olds I knew 20 years ago, they don't say, hey, when I woke up this morning, I needed help, a little help to get back up off the toilet. My hip locked up on, you know, my knee and hip, or my left knee and hip, I had to kind of roll off and bow. They won't tell you that.
Right.
Nobody, right. All them old dudes, they tell my man, I don't go play basketball no more. Them niggas be tripping. No, that ain't it. He has to bathe himself in Bengay after one game of pickup. That's why. But they won't say it. They won't say that for some reason your stomach just gonna start hurting like it used to when you had got crazy and binge drank. You know what I'm saying? But now it's just going to be like some ice cream you ate too late. Nobody is willing to admit how quickly the human body deteriorates on us. And I'm mad.
And it does.
Because I could have taken some precautions 20, maybe not 30 years ago. I don't think a 17-year-old me would have told you to shut the fuck up. But now a 27-year-old me.
You think a 27-year-old you would have really listened?
Yes. Because I had already given birth. So I understood the shift of body, what it means to for a body to shift.
Okay.
But I thought it was going to do that when you get, it does that for cancer and, I don't know, AIDS and, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Really horrible disease.
Not just because it's October.
The clock turned. Right.
Okay. Not because, right. You know. What you mean? As the winters come, my knees will stop functioning. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making sure I let everybody 30 years and younger know. You ain't gonna exercise just out, boom. You might be able. You can't Pilates. You ain't gonna Pilates this away. And it's coming. Like I used to run track league. Come on now. And when I got finished giving birth, I rededicated myself to the gym and pulled myself back from 300s. So I I know. And it's not even the gym can't fix it. Not the gym.
I was telling the cat just the other day. I was like, yo, a couple years ago, I don't know what happened, but I woke up and I couldn't make a fist. Like, my fingers hurt so damn bad that I could not honestly do a firm handshake. I couldn't make a fist, nothing. I have no idea what caused it, but here's the ill thing. Just like it came, it went. One day, I was hurting like God knows what. The next day, I'm fine. It wasn't next day-ish. You know, it really did go on for a while. Like, seriously, like, I couldn't even greet some brothers properly because my hand was so... Actually, it was both my hands at one point. It was so damn... And I'm thinking I had, arthritis bad or... Like, I never broke my hand. I'm thinking that maybe gout had set in or something. My mind is racing. And like I said, it came... It stayed, it was gone, just like that. But then my hips started doing the same thing. Like in Maryland, we still have a lot of basement homes. So, you know, my laundry is in the basement. So I'm going out to do laundry, and I went down the stairs fine. But coming back up those stairs, it was like, oof. And that lasted for a couple of weeks. And just like it came, no idea what happened. I didn't change my diet or anything like that. It just happened, you know. But those are the 40 blues, man. You know, I'm hoping that 50 is a relief from all this crap. I don't know if it gets worse or not, but I know damn sure these 40s have been a monster. Like I said, I've had one surgery this year, about to have another surgery this year. This is the most surgeries I had in my whole damn life. Well, let me see. Yeah, I'll have more surgeries this year than I've had in my whole damn life. For what? You know, I gotta.
I'm like, I can't. I'm not gonna do
it.
My my golden years doubled over with my stomach hurting and a bum ankle, bent over because I can't extend my back. I can't grip a pencil. I can't wear no shoes without a saved heel. I can't listen. That's too much. So I'm trying to figure it out. Other than that, I'm having a fantastic year. This year, since I have given up the idea of trying to be with somebody, I have rechanneled all of that energy into the children, and it is manifesting itself wonderfully into my physical form, and I'm very satisfied, except for I put on a little Q30 eating shrimp, sitting on the couch eating shrimp all of 2020. But I got on up 2021, and I only eat shrimp on the weekend while I'm walking now. I won't eat it on the couch no more watching movies. It's the shrimp movie combination I can't do.
Okay. So hold on. You said you returned that energy to the children. Are you talking about the children in the classroom, or are you talking about your children?
Same. I'm treating all them kids the same now. Once I realized the true power of a real teacher is all them kids is your kids. If you keep trying to separate your children from those children, you are either putting your children way too above their consciousness, because them kids is some badass. Your kids is bad as hell too. Or, you know, you've given way too much energy to other people's kids above your own. Either way, you got to treat all them kids like one pack of kids, including your own, and you can start seeing, you know, because truly there's nothing I'm going to tell somebody else's child that I won't tell my own.
So, your daughter, how y'all doing? With the tattoo and all that jazz, y'all good now?
Well, now it wasn't even a tattoo. My daughter had looked me in my face 2 years ago and told me she hated me. Straight up, it has such a profound effect on me. You know, I've been told I hate you before several times, husbands and other people. You know. So it never really had affected me like that. I'm accustomed to being hated. She looked me dead in my, and you know, she was a little angry, and she looked me dead in my face and repeated it, "I hate you." And so I never did really deal with my daughter again after that. I mean, I talked to her and stuff sometime, but I had it to where, you know, I would tag team my children Sunday for one child for real concentration, you know, Monday for the other. You understand, going back and forth, having at least a 1 hour conversation with them, seeing what's up, where they at in their head. And I just, after that, I had to let her go. I mean, I talked to her, but it would hurt. She hurt my feelings. I mean, at the ripe old age of 45, she hurt my feelings. So now we talk, but we talk mostly because she works nights, and her and her boyfriend both work nights, and they need a babysitter. So whatever hatred she had for me, she had to squash it just long enough to get her free babysitting hours in. And I do
babysitter,
you know, not,
for what?
Because I was gonna do it anyway, whether she hates me or not. But the point, you know, but eventually people have to sit their hatred of you down so that they can use you, you know?
Babysitting for what?
Her boyfriend got a baby.
Oh, okay.
And she don't want to be with him if he don't want to be with the baby. She don't want a man who don't want his kids.
Oh, okay.
But wanting him and wanting his kids mean that sometimes it's her time to babysit when he at work, and when she at work and he at work, and the baby's mama goes to work, it becomes my turn. She's a cute little sweetheart. In fact, because my daughter is not even 100 pounds, she's probably going to be the only granddaughter I can, you know, realize from that. I don't think my daughter's going to be able to breed. She don't have enough weight on her to breed. My daughter's maybe 100 pounds. Maybe.
You need a certain amount of weight to breed. That's what I'm laughing at.
You can't get your ovaries. For one, you stop your period after a while. You can get so malnourished that you no longer mince. Then, even if you do get pregnant, she doesn't have an eating habit good enough to support a fetus.
Okay. Do you want grandchildren? Are you at that point? Do you want grandchildren?
Yes. My legacy is all I dream about, because I fucked that first set up. So I really would like... I'm just messing with you.
Yo. Yeah, hold on.
No, pause. I want a chance to do that, though.
One second. That is some real shit. 818-691-7348. Again, 818-691-7348. If you call in, hit the number one if you got a comment. But, yo, that's some real shit right there. Like, acknowledging the fact that I used to watch House. I don't know if you ever watched House. But House, one of the characters on one of the shows, House said, you know, our parents messed all of us up. And for you to come out and be like, yo, I fucked that first set up, like, that is so real. Like, but, you know, there's not a manual. I tell my children, like, yo, there's not a manual to parenting. Like, all of you are different. I treated you the same, but differently, because I could trust you more. You were more active in the home. You were more astute with regard and respect to your studies. And you were just a badass little motherfucker. Like, you are who you are. And I treated you accordingly. You know, I could give you $10, send you to the store for something that costs $5, sales tax is 6%. You would bring me home $4.70. I would send your ass to the store with $10 for something that costs $5. You would not give me any change at all. Like, I was stupid and forgot that I sent you to the store for something that costs $5. Like, I just, you know, the other brother, he'll give me $3.80. Like, dog, I can do math. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's going on around here? You know, it's, you are who you are. I treated you accordingly. So, yeah, it's touchy-going. It's touchy-going. But,
and, you know, somebody else would listen to me say that. Let me preface this. I got some really good kids. They've been able to travel the world without me. My children went all around the world without me. Got went there, had their fun, and came back without me.
Right.
So that you can't do that. If you're not a good parent and if you haven't done your job, you can't send no child at no age nowhere without you.
Right.
So I have to, my daughter is, you know, she's not finished with college, but she did not drop out of high school. Or she, you know, it ain't no, she don't have a legacy of children that she can't care for. And my son is still a virgin, you know. He ain't been in nobody's basement.
So you believe?
Nobody, you know.
So as far as
I believe. He would have to be crafty as hell, Lee, but I can't put it past him. He's a bright boy. He can figure it out. You know, I have to say that, but I have these visions in my head. You know what we built for our children? I built a fictitious castle of goals for my children. And they just kind of, they saw it. They heard it, a few of them. But they have no interest at all in that reality I had prepared for them in my thoughts.
Now, what were your thoughts for them?
Well, they would both be multilingual. They would all, they would all be alive. They would all be multilingual. Mm-hmm. They would all have at least one to two instruments they play. They would all be, you know, I just had these notions of the kind of children I wanted to raise. And I just did not have the time or money to do it. I just didn't, or the support.
And
so, you know, but
support?
I got it in now. They can all add and count you, not finish short. Neither one of them's checked without them knowing. You know,
what support do you think you needed that you didn't get for you?
Right. Well, I married two foreign nationals, right? Each that spoke their own mother tongue. neither of those individuals taught their children even a word.
But again, I'm not talking about the children. I'm talking about the youth. So,
that,
you know,
oh,
the,
what did I, oh,
you know, wait.
Oh, me.
What support you feel as though you need?
That's a
you,
really
right.
hard
mm-hmm.
one, because I don't get down like that. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be asking some good questions.
What would I have needed? Wow.
Yeah, for you.
You know what I needed?
Like, did you need
times,
your mama to be like, girl?
A couple of times a week, I needed someone to take my children so that I could study. I very much so was... had textbook in one hand and the stirring spoon in the other. You know what I'm saying?
But okay, but see, before all that, did you need your mama to be like, girl, don't you marry that fool?
No, I do not accept very well the advice of people who have not done what I'm trying to do. You can't give me, if a woman with a string of failed marriages, I really don't listen very well to what it would take to keep a marriage right. She don't know. You don't ask
really?
For no exercise advice. You understand?
Well, you know they say, those who can't, you teach.
Right. But I remember my fourth grade gym teacher. She could not stand up. She was in that chair pointing with her big turkey wing arm, talking about, now, jump higher. I do not, you know, and you have to be careful who you take. You know, don't take, like somebody who don't do drugs should not be able to tell you where the fire weed is.
I agree with that, man.
Okay, so my mother had never had a successful marriage, so I probably would never have listened to her advice on how to create one, because I haven't seen
one
modeled for me.
But she could identify a clown, though. That's my point. So yeah, she may not have been successful in it, but she could look at that joke and be like, "Oh, that's a clown." I had seen the clown before. That was my third husband. That's him.
No, I know the clown when I do. I didn't marry clowns. I married an illiterate whore and an extremely intelligent, compassionless person. Mm-hmm. But had I married a clown, I would definitely have asked her, because she indeed did marry a clown.
An illiterate whore. So... this is why you have the literacy test now for men, the literacy requirement.
Oh, yes. I am not playing. I will not suffer anymore because someone I feel like I want to be tied to cannot make critical analysis and use that to make a sound decision. I refuse. Hey, man, one time we were sitting there just chilling, watching TV, my first husband and I, and the lights went off. And I'm looking like, I went to the neighbors. I said, yo, they was playing music. They lights was on. I turned to my ex-husband and I asked him, happened?
Why would you do that, though?
And he said,
why
you didn't tell me
like,
to pay the light
thing?
Bill. You didn't tell me to pay the light bill. I was done. We really didn't have no marriage after that. I didn't tell you to pay the light bill. What was you doing before you met me? Who handled it before me? That kind of stuff there, I don't do that. And since you don't know until you ask them to read something, and most of the people around you are illiterate. Did you know that, Lee? Most of the people around you are illiterate, functionally illiterate.
Unfortunately, I have found that out. Unfortunately.
Like if you count 20 people in your life, I'm talking about family. Okay? Count 20 people in your life, at least half of them motherfuckers is just doing day-to-day maintenance without being able to make critical analysis. They can, even if they ain't reading, they don't even know how to ask the right questions to get the full breadth of whatever it is they need to understand. Forget reading, you know? They can't even listen to gain info.
Yeah. I have had the unfortunate of running across a number of cats whom, you know, you sit there, you're having conversations with them, and they give you that look back, and you're like, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Like, I had a meeting with my team about last year at this time, something like that, and I used a simple analysis of treat me like your paycheck, meaning, you know, you want your paycheck on time, I want you to come to work on time. And I said this specifically. I want you to come to work on time. You want your paycheck in full, I want you to give me a full days of work. Treat me like your paycheck. You know what I'm saying? And left the meeting, and I had seven motherfuckers stop me like, what does that mean? Like, did you all listen to what I said? I said specifically what I was saying. And I only said it hyperbole, but I broke it down. I said specifically, you want your paycheck on time, I want you to come to work on time. Time. You want your paycheck in full, I want you to give me a full day's work. Your paycheck doesn't stop. I'm sorry, your pay doesn't stop until you clock out. I don't want you to stop working until you clock out. Treat me like I'm your paycheck. What do you not understand? And this was males and females, just totally lost. Totally lost. 2 weeks ago, I said to my crew, I said, hey, look, we're going to have this week, we're going to have to work Friday. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a hard stop on Thursday, and then we'll pick up on Friday and do the stuff on Friday that we need to do for Saturday. We broke. Hey, what does that mean we're going to do a hard stop? What do you not understand? I just said we're doing a hard stop, meaning we will not pick anything today for Saturday. We're going to pick everything today just for today. Tomorrow when we come in, we're going to do everything for tomorrow, for Saturday tomorrow. What don't you get, dog? Like, what the fuck? Do you all not listen? You know what I'm saying? Or what?
I mean, and he heard
as a teacher,
I'm telling you, it's a weird phenomenon. They hear you. They're watching you. They're not even divided in their attention. They're watching your lips. They have no foundation with which to build context from.
Not only that. I think it's because they're so disengaged because of how information comes to them. It's so quick. It's so fast. And it's so visual that when you speak, they're clueless. They don't get it because you're talking it. If you drew it, they would get it. If you showed it on the projector, they would get it. But because it's coming to them auditorily, they just like, I don't understand. It does not compute. I do not understand. I cannot believe. It really is like that fucking simple. And it's sad. It's sad as shit. You know, so I shared with you last night. I did a thing last night, right? So I hung out with one of our favorite people last night, right? And as he does his thing, he always engages the audience and whatnot. And almost always you get somebody in the audience, the third, fourth, fifth person, that's not ready to engage back at him, which he takes, runs with it, makes a huge joke out of it, and it's brilliant. And I'm like, yo, you see this coming. How are you not prepared for this man to engage with you? How are you not prepared for that? You see him talk to this person. You see him talk to that person. He's talking to everybody right in front of him. You think he ain't going to pick on you? Are you serious right now? You really thinking that you have an invisible cloak on and he just doesn't see you? I don't understand it. I don't get it. But, again, I think that these cats are so disengaged because of the way that they get information, that they really are oblivious to a lot of the things that go on around them. Be it you speaking to them directly, they don't get that because they're not used to people actually talking to them. you know, one of the things I get a lot of is when I talk to people, I get feedback from them that what do they say? They say like I'm being aggressive or whatever with my feet, and I'm like, why is that? Because I insist that I look at you and that you look at me when I'm talking to you. Like, I want to make sure that you understand what I'm saying. And a part of that is that you see my mouth moving and you can relate to it. Because you may not hear everything that I say, but your eyes, between your eyes and your ears, they're going to catch everything that I'm trying to get to. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, man, it's horrible. It is absolutely flipping horrible. Horrible. Horrible trying to relate to these cats. Trying to communicate nowadays. And look, I'm gonna get off because you know Rodney's on. I'm gonna let him get in a second. But you know, I speak to this time again, and I'm going to continue to speak to it. The insistence upon typing to people all day long, all of your thoughts, all of your feelings, and that is a waste of energy. Why? Because people can't. That's not true. I think younger people get it. Older people miss the boat. You know, because we're not accustomed to communicating like that. So, you know, I don't even think people in general get that. But I'll drop all that. I got to get somebody on. I'll call LK. I'll call somebody. Dr. Raj. We need somebody on. To talk about that. But, you know, all this damn texting and emailing and all this crap of how I feel and what I thought. Talk to people. I think people would get it better if you actually sat down, got them one-on-one, killed the distractions, the television, the music, blah, 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 and just talk to them. I think communication would go so much better, just so much better. Good morning, Brother Rodney. What's happening, man?
Good morning, Brother Lee. Good morning, Sister Rossi. I hope everybody is doing well this bright, shiny, sunny Saturday. At least it is here in Las Vegas anyway. I don't know
where
about
the hell you at?
East Coasters and Midwesterners.
It ain't that doozy.
I'm just saying, we at the Vegas nice weather out here. You know, normally it's hot Vegas. But it's nice Vegas now.
Okay. I might need to come out there and get you some of that.
Yeah, I can imagine this is the perfect Vegas time. Yeah, that cool wind blowing across that desert. Not such a strong solar force down on your head. Yeah, now it's Vegas time.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about middle of the day. Even late at night, you know, for those people who like to be outside, you could just be outside all night. For those who like to get a little music and a little food, a little something to drink, this is that time of year here in Vegas. I wish I could share it with all of you because it's one of the reasons why I am here. Not to mention the fact that this is the West Coast Black Mecca.
Okay. So what do you think about the point about the communication, Adam?
You said communication, the topic you were just hitting?
Yeah, man. I mean, how do we get through that? How do we get to that? I mean,
you're right. Mr. Rodney, what we were trying to describe was this issue that people who effectively communicate, meaning when you talk to them, they can glean and understand what you're saying, and they can possibly even repeat it back to you with their own understanding. That ability to listen to people and get information from them and use it or even store it correctly so that it can be used, it's turning into a dying skill. And I call it part of, you know, the illiteracy pact, you know, people who just were functionally illiterate. But Lee seems to want to say there's something else more to it. What do you think, Mr. Rodney?
Well, I think that, you know, to put it kind of direct, is that Brother Lee has that unrealistic expectation of people today, considering how they are taught, you know, how they're educated in school, what they're educated on, and society's expectations of them. When we have low expectations, and this is something that Dr. Robert L. Green, Professor Emeritus from, I believe, Michigan State, used to talk about in a couple of his books, is when you set low expectations, people tend to meet them. And when we are dealing with communication, even what Lee spoke about, being able to look someone in the eye, that was a sign of seriousness, that used to be a sign of maturity. Well, think about the world that we live in today. When our children are outside, what do we tell them? You know, kind of stay away from people, mind your own business, don't be looking at people. I go walking just about daily in my community, and I've been doing it for years. Still to this day, the majority of young people that I encounter, and oftentimes I walk around schools because they have really nice tracks here in Vegas High School, and most of them, it's like I'm invisible to them because they're purposely not given eye contact because of stranger danger. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but, well, let me take that back. There's nothing wrong with teaching your children about stranger danger and those types of things, because that's real. But at the same token, we're losing something in the process. When we don't teach children proper communications, even into adulthood, we're losing what the expectation that Lee has. When we give our babies Tableaus, tablets, when they're still infants, they're not even toddlers, and we give them electronic devices, that's where it focuses their attention. As a matter of fact, Lee, you're talking about people looking at you in the eye. How about people just seeing you, period? Are you all aware that there is a kind of an issue? Well, no, not kind of. There is an issue with our young people having eye problems, and it is the culprit is the focus on screens that's causing a particular type of vision loss in young people. So not only aren't they being taught from a societal perspective to engage with other humans, other citizens, right, but they are actually losing the physical ability because of the modern technology that we push off on even our babies.
You know, and we're shoving these devices at these children so young, not we, but I see folks doing that, in order to shut them up and to occupy their time, and versus what we used to do, the see and say, the see and spell, what the hell that thing was called? You pull the string and it tells you, cow goes moo, horse goes hee-hee. Remember that thing back in the day? You know, but it was an audio-visual training tool. So, you know, there is a difference between that and that small screen, because, again, now you're having your babies focus on this little itty-bitty damn screen from the time that they're babies. How does that impact their visual? Very good point, Rodney. Very good point. How does that impact their vision as they get older, you know, versus this big old thing that allowed them not only to see it, but also to see what other things that were going on around them? You know, then it was the pop-up thing. You know, you hit the button and it light up, or something would pop up out the little hole, and you got it right or you got it wrong, and you know what I'm saying? You make the little noises and stuff. It's totally different than, you know, dropping an iPad or iPhone or Android phone.
You have to hear that as a person who uses these devices in an educational capacity. I'm on the fence. I have seen people get to their proper grade level using educational sites on a tablet, on a device. In fact, we make sure in my district, if a child is not on that device at least 30 minutes, the principal come and ask you why you're not using the technology that they have, you know, purchased in order to make straddle the technological divide. Because the white kids have been having their tablets. Nobody in the black community had a little computer. So now, just getting us equal with the functioning of the technology is what we got in our mind. We ain't even thinking about attention span, vision changes, or any kind of socio-emotional growth. We just want our children to be able to compute, period.
Yeah, but Sister
because
Raji,
that's where society went. We went head first into technology, and we didn't want our babies not to be able to participate.
Well, maybe in some areas we would have been better off had we not participated in certain aspects of this technology in some of the ways that we are. So here's an example. Here's two examples, actually. We know from multiple studies, and these studies aren't just ones that happened recently, but 10, 20 years ago, that more technology in a classroom does not produce a more capable pupil. Let me repeat it. More technology in the classroom does not produce a more capable pupil, number one. Number two, and it's equally as important, multiple studies also show that two children side by side, one learning from a tablet, as an example, screen, one reading from books, hard books, traditional books, you know, the one with pages that you have to flip.
Yeah, the actual thing, yeah.
Yes.
You can feel,
okay.
You touch, yeah, that thing.
We also know that reading comprehension is lower in children who only learn these techniques on the screen or predominantly use screens than children who read physical books. I can tell you anecdotally. Now, those are all studies, facts, science, right? Anecdotally, I say that we got T'Challa, I'm T'Challo. And he was known for, he had superpowers. Well, I used to tell people my superpower is reading comprehension, because people can read something today. And as we see with a lot of things that are on the news, they can read something and they get something totally different out of it, or they simply aren't able to glean whatever facts, whatever information that was being conveyed to them in text. So here's the flip side, because there is another side. Scientists, it's not proven yet, but what they're expecting and some are hoping, that what this means is that we're in a transitionary phase in the minds of our children and in our evolution, and that is that children's brains, because of the technology, the computers, the tablets, their brains are being rewired to better learn from this new technology. And we'll have to see how well that works as time goes by.
Well, I can tell you. I don't know exactly, because there's three contracts in this city. The contract between the parent and the school, you know, the parent and the state. Then there's the contract between the teacher and the parent, and then there's the contract between the teacher and the state. And we have a program that goes directly from the student to the state. like the state is tapping into what the student is and is not understanding based on, you know, how well the instructor is teaching or whatever is happening at home. And that's new, in my opinion. This is new to me. I thought that the district has always relied on the teacher to create a bridge between the, you know, the district and the student. Not my district. They go directly to the student through a program. And this program is how they decide whether or not the teachers are even doing what they were supposed to be doing. If a child is not learning at their grade level or even only one below, they start making calls to that principal and ask that principal to create some kind of program with that teacher until they can get the majority of those lagging children up to just, you know, right below proficiency or proficiency. They are done, here that is, done waiting for any kind of learning curves and all that. They mean for us to get our children, you know, as close to where they should be as possible. The only way they could do that was through electronics. There was no other way for them to get a form of direct relationship to the student. And so they use that information they get from working with those students to test the teacher. Okay? It is technically our, what they call, checks and balance system. They go to the student. If the student in the fifth grade can't conceive of something that should have happened in the third grade, you know, they start talking to wherever that fourth grade teacher is. They start talking to her principal and asking why she had 20% of her students who were on any successful educational gains within that time, you know, school year time span. And then, you know, so I am on the fence. I never bought my son a tablet, but I did buy him a school computer. It was how he was going to do it. It was how he was going to learn from now on. I did not go to any bookstore and get him, you know, he doesn't have an Encyclopedia Britannica set. But I did.
What?
I did. Did you have one, Lee?
I had colors. I had the blue one, the maroon one, and the green one.
Brother Rodney, did you have an encyclopedic set?
Okay, let's keep in mind that when I was in school was a little earlier in the century than the two of you.
In the development of man.
No, Sister Rashi, I did not have a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas. As a matter of fact, if I wanted to see a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas, I had to walk about 12 blocks to the closest library that had, I think, two sets. I think they had two sets of Encyclopedia, or it might have been one set of Encyclopedia Britannica, and I think the other one was a World Book. And, you know, you had to get the little card out the little box, you know, that had all the drawers in it with the numbers and the alphabet, the Dewey Decimal System, to figure out where it was. And I'm sure everybody remembers the Dewey Decimal System. So
Take it back, Roddy. The Dewey Decimal System.
They don't. And
the Dewey Decimal.
Started this conversation. They don't know it. They could not find a piece of it. They could not. If you tell them, I got $1 million out here, go in there and go find this book, you can walk home with your $1 million. They're not going to be able to come back and find. They won't be able to use the coded system to go and make their way to the information. This is the problem. On the internet, you just type in, it's a Boolean search. You type in the first word that's most important, and you narrow the field down with the specifics. They can do that, but they cannot go into a room full of knowledge and extract one item of knowledge and look through that until they find that piece of information. And
that is
and
so
I,
sad.
And I may make this my new lesson, because that That is how I person, but this is new to me, computers. The book is where I learned, you know, cut my teeth. So I understand, Brother Rodney. Don't act like I asked you, did you have an Ishango bone, though? He act like I asked him about, you know, cuneiform and Sanskrit. Mr. Rodney.
You know what I'm saying?
There are people.
Remember, I was a little before you.
Like, did you have a set up Encyclopedia Britannica at your house? Shucks, we barely had one in, well, like I said, I had to walk 12 blocks away. It was. I don't even know if it was still in Bed-Stuy. I might have been in Flushing.
Right, in the neighborhood.
I think I was in Bensonhurst when I got to the library. But no, seriously, but that's one of the issues, though, is our community. You know, we often talk about food deserts. Well, we've also been deprived of learning things because obviously if you wanted to gain further knowledge back when I was coming up, there were books out there, but there was no bookstore. That's number one. Number two, the library typically was outside of your community or so far somewhere else in your community that it really was a hump to get there. But I did, luckily, my mother encouraged me to do that. And in New York, young people, you know, go walk by themselves longer distances earlier in life than in other places in the country, just because of the way we live. You know, we didn't have like school buses. We had city buses. Well, of course, you tell somebody in Las Vegas to put their child on a city bus to go to school, and people will be rightfully protesting at the school board.
Right.
So it was different. And as you all have heard before, that's how I learned about Black Panther, the comic book character, was because I went to the library, and the library was a place of books and periodicals, which included magazines and comic books. And my mother couldn't afford comic books, but I could go to the library, and after I got my work done, I could read comic books. And I'm thankful for that, because comic books really helped me in my vocabulary beyond my peers. So reading is truly fundamental.
Can I say this? Speaking of New York, man, you know, that was a contrast in my life. Because you're right, Rodney. Like, I'm sitting here trying to remember where the hell the nearest library was back in Harlem, and I cannot remember where the hell the nearest library was. But here in Baltimore, it was a gift and a curse for Baltimore. Baltimore was very much built on neighborhoods, and your neighborhood pretty much had everything you needed. I mean, literally everything you needed: hospitals, schools, groceries, libraries, so on and so forth. So we had a massive amount of libraries here in Baltimore. Like, you literally could walk to 2-3 libraries. And if you were on a certain side of town, you could walk to 2 or 3 libraries easily. Now, obviously, they weren't right across the street from one another. Some would be more of a hike than the other, but still, it was still within that community that the 2-3 libraries would be in. Now, they may be on opposite ends of the spectrum, but again, still the same neighborhood. So for me, going to the library was different. I remember clearly there was one about 8 blocks away from the first house I remember here in Baltimore, and then it was another one about 6 blocks away. But one you went to the right, the other you went to the left. Now, the one further away, 8 blocks away, had the prettier girls, so normally we would walk that way. Keeping it real, son. It had the prettier girls.
So, but it had nothing to do with the quality of the information. It had everything to do with who else would be there at the library.
Right, it had to do with the quality of the girls.
The library is still that place. If you need your documents, scanned and in fact, it is the business center of the Black community, because you can't really go and get nothing done at your local grocery. It used to be you could get copies made at the grocery store, but not anymore.
Mm.
Now,
and at the postal service,
the library is where you have to go if you intend to you know, get a passport. How about that? You ready for your passport? Go to the library. It's all there, there and the post office. If you want to, you know, in fact, and then what I love about the library is it's a moving, flexible thing. When you go and look for a book and it ain't there, you tell them, hey, I need you all to buy this book. And they will. They will buy the book you need, you know, and add it to the library's collection in case there's another soul who needs that book later on. It's a fantastic idea. It's so vital to raising the literacy of a society that it should be like that, Lee. Within, what, 20 square blocks, you should see a library. Because that's where not just where children go to find pretty girls, but also where their mama, you know, has to go if, to get, you know, her lease notarized or to, you know, it's a lot that can happen there. And I intend to be a library person when I get older, you know, much older. I'm going to be one of those people you find hanging out, you know, shaping the neighborhood library so that the children and the people in the community can do what you did, Mr. Rodney. Walk them little 20 blocks and find them a magazine that turns them into the next, you know, Rodney Smith.
Well, it's interesting that if you notice, well, let me ask a question. So out here, they're starting not to include libraries in schools. In other words, instead of a library being an integral part of the learning process in the schools and in the physical structure of the school, they're starting to, you know, they're talking about building schools without libraries. Or you walk into the library, what used to be the library as we knew it, and there's really just a handful of books. There may be computer terminals, but there are no books. And because of the whole reading comprehension problem and the struggles of the special ed community, I think that that's doing our children a disservice. It's sort of like about 20, 30 years ago, they were talking about removing history and even, I think it was social studies, from the curriculum because they said that it was kind of useless. You know, why do we need to teach history and social studies? Well, if you see what's going on
Trump changed that.
Some of the issues with just teaching black history in schools today. If you see something called fake news today, you know, his truth, my truth, her truth, their truth. What about the truth? And so as we continue to grow as a society, you know, society is not a straight line or growth. Societal growth is not a straight line up. It takes some dips. Now, of course, the idea is not for the dips to be too, you know, too great of a dip and not to stay in the dip. You know, let's not plateau in the dip, you know, too long. If we go down, let's not go down far, and then let's rise up higher than we started. We're right now with the whitewashing of education. And when I say whitewashing of education, remember in Texas, they were telling people, if you talk about the Holocaust, first of all, you probably shouldn't talk about the Holocaust. But if you do happen to talk about the Holocaust, you know, try not to say, you know, which side may have been the bad ones or the good ones or who was right and wrong. You know, just kind of lay it out there that there was a few people that were hurt. Don't talk about slavery. I believe in my home state and some other states, but specifically North Carolina, the curriculum was, well, they slaves is kind of a harsh term. Really, they were immigrants who came here to work. See, those types of things are harmful. And one of the things that made me late coming on the show today, and I apologize for that, Brother Lee, because I should have taken my vitals earlier. But as I was opening up to do that, I got a pop-up on Facebook from a post I had written about how America cannot be great as long as it made onerous and sometimes racist laws to hold, and that as a state, as a nation, we can head in the direction of greatness, and I'm paraphrasing now, once we get rid of those onerous and sometimes racist laws that will elevate everyone, and that's what ultimately elevates a state or country into greatness. And that was a post that I put in what I thought was a county political page. And one of the white members of the page that belonged to the American Independent Party, I believe it's called, said, well, what laws are those? So my retort, because I knew that there was this person wasn't serious, but it's my job to educate where I can. My retort was all of the ones that are racist and onerous. So he sent the response back that said, well, just name three. And I thought, okay, well, let's start with the United States Constitution and the Slavery Clause, 10th Amendment. Oh, as a matter of fact, let's start with the Nevada Constitution that has a slavery clause. Well, there's two. And, oh, by the way, the one we started out with, because I started out that here's another example of the lack of a proper education and lack of diversity in education in him asking the question as an adult male. And I says, the fact that we have multiple states that has laws that mandate there is no teaching of about diverse cultural groups and different peoples. Those are all racist and onerous things. That is impacting our learning. It has always impacted our learning in this country, and it's what continues to hold us back today. And that's why we have to change those things. The so-called good people that I always hear about that are the majority cannot continue to allow these others to have the marketplace of ideas with their fake news and everybody's my truth, your truth, their truth, her truth, and his truth. There's just the truth.
Man, look, you ain't never struck it harder than that. I wanted to cover General Powell, though, because he lost his life on Monday due to COVID complications. He was also dealing with cancer. He was fighting cancer. So obviously his immune system was compromised, so on and so forth, and he was at higher risk of passing away. Now, Rodney, you and I both served on while General Powell was in the chairmanship of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was the Secretary of Defense, right? The Secretary of Defense, yeah.
The first Secretary of Defense.
Secretary of Defense.
He was also the National Security Advisor.
Right. And he was the youngest chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So he's done a lot for the country. You know, he decided to align himself with the Republican Party, which was a different turn for a lot of black votes. Not all, but a lot. And that's cool. You know, that's the bed he decided to lie in. He has been an example for a lot of folks to follow. His legacy, however, in my opinion, is tainted by his speech to the UN and in favor of us going into Iraq because of the belief that Iraq had WMDs, weapons of mass destruction. Now, I say that not lightly, but I say it honestly because when he made the speech, I said, this will be the death of Colin Powell. I said that he did what, as a soldier, he would have done when told by his superiors, this is what we want you to do. I don't know in his heart of hearts he believed in it, but I believe that he was given a directive to do it. And so he stood back. He tightened up. He snapped the salute. He said, yes, sir. And he went and did it. When we found that that was all smoke and mirrors, which a lot of people knew beforehand, but when it was proven to the world that was all smoke and mirrors, whom looked the worst? President of the United States or Colin Powell? Because the UN was not moved by the U.S.'s pleas to go in to Iraq. They were not. I think they were moved, and they trusted him more than they trusted the President of the United States at the time. And after his speech, they authorized use of force in Iraq. But again, once it was proven that that was all smoke and mirrors and lies, it looked worse on him than anybody else, which started his political career. If he, you know, because he did have some aspirations, but he was never really taken seriously. He can never really get out the gate because of that. And I think that folks feared that he would have been the first black president. And so he was set up, in my personal opinion, he was set up to take that fall, to be honest with you. I think that the machine did not want to see him or anyone else at the time become the first black president. They set him out there to take that hit, knowing what it would do to him and his name, his brand, and therefore they got what they wanted. But they had no idea the dark horses in the other stable, Obama. They had no idea the dark horses in the other stable. So let's not dwell on either of those, to be honest with you. We're still talking about a man who very much loved this country, a man who served this country well, and very well, in his military service. But like anybody else, man or woman, all of our lives are complicated, and his life was so complicated by his actions during and or before Operation Desert Shield. So, but a moment, please, for the life and legacy of General Colin Powell. Sir, we appreciate you. We thank you. And as the saying goes, rest well, soldier. You have been relieved.
We have the watch.
We have the watch. Rodney, your opinion?
So, Lee, I take history is important. And sometimes the way we say things, we say them based off of where we are today versus where things were back then when the decisions were made. Mm-hmm. So I want to hit the piece about Colin Powell being a Republican, because we tend to look at that as a little bit, well, as a negative. And mm-hmm. Colin Powell, when he transitioned to being the ever after life, he was 84 years old. And one of the things that I believe was said in the book Peril, the recently released book Peril, is to Bob Woodward, is don't feel sorry for me. I'm almost 84 years old. Colin Powell was the son, I believe, of Jamaican immigrant in New York. In New York, homeboy.
They got a building named after.
Colin Powell was not a graduate of West Point. Colin Powell did it. He was in ROTC. Unheard of to make, first of all, for a black person really to make general, right? And less heard of for any person to become general who hasn't been to West Point when we're talking about the Army Military Academy, and then to become the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and to be so young when he did it. You know, these are all positive accolades that go to Secretary Powell. And I always want to call him General Powell because I give it more respect but in a literal term, in the hierarchy of the chain of command, a secretary
Correct.
Of defense is higher in rank than any general, no matter how many stars they may have. And keep in mind that they had even talked about nominating Colin Powell for a fifth star,
yeah.
also unheard of for a black person and most people, period. What I'm laying out here is a level of respect that this man of immigrant roots brought to the world, not just America, to the world. And why do I say to the world? Because of what you just said, is that when it was inconclusive on whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction, I always say that they go to the black man, the black person, when they're in greatest peril. And whether the first black mayor back in Rashi, your neck of the woods in the Midwest of a large city, or the first president of the United States. And in this case, when they needed a voice of reason, when they needed someone whose power of voice and integrity was so great that even though the world might be skeptical on this one person's word, countries would be willing to commit their greatest treasure, which is their young people. They turned to Colin Powell. Now, those devils did what they have done to black people so many times and used us for their own advancement. And under the direction of Vice President Cheney and people who didn't understand the chain of command, they understood the white chain of command more than they understood the chain of command, right? And they manufactured film and evidence to show to General Powell that made it look like there were weapons of mass destruction. And it was under that he was tricked by his own government, by his own state. And it was under that guise that he made the comments that he made. He didn't do it because he was a good soldier and saluting, because Colin Powell came up in a time where he knew that you don't just salute and say, may I have another, sir, when someone gives you an illegal, unethical, or immoral order. General Milley retorted us that when X-45 gave him directions to use military troops to disperse crowds, and he refused to do it because that was an illegal order. So they knew Colin Powell had that level of integrity. So they manufactured evidence so that the voice that the world, a black man's voice, let's not forget that, you know, a black man that they don't want us to learn about in history. They don't want all Americans to learn about in history because they don't want us to learn about black people in history in this country. As I revert back to the fella in the Facebook group that didn't know about racist laws in this country or said he did. What I'm trying to say is this is a man that had such integrity throughout the world that the Bush administration, of which he was a part of, had to pool all of the resources of government to manufacture evidence to get the one person that could speak on behalf of the world, to get the rest of the nations in the world to commit their greatest treasure to a war. That is huge to me, and I don't want that to be lost in what many people say, well, the worst thing he's done. What I liked about Colin Powell was after it was over and he found out the truth, he did something that so many people today, especially politicians, leaders, and people in government, aren't willing to do. He confessed. He admitted. He, in the Christian world, he repented and asked for forgiveness, because once he found out that he had been misled and that it was on the integrity of him, his name, the name that his father gave him, that he had committed an egregious error in adding his voice and putting that heavy weight on the scale of going to war, he acknowledged, hey, I was wrong. Can we get some people like that in government today? We're talking about a giant of a man. And then on the point about, I want to hit this about being a Republican, most black people after the Civil War, because that's when we were allowed to vote, right? Most black people were Republicans. And the reason why they were Republicans, because under the leadership of Lincoln and later followed by Grant, it was Republicans that pushed at that time, that pushed for the freedom of slaves in this country. It wasn't always pretty, but they are the ones who pushed that and made it happen and fought that war against the treasonous rebel Confederates. And they're still treasonous to this day, by the way, according to statute. But it was the Republicans who did that. It was the Republicans who up until, 1887 or something like that, who fought for black people until they had the Second Great Compromise, and the Republicans sold black people out in order for their guy, Rutherford B. Hayes, to become president. They had to remove the troops from the South, and that was where blacks were making the greatest gains, not in the North. They were making the gains in the South. And when they removed those troops out of the South, Jim Crow laws, many of those laws that I was speaking to that fellow on the page about, the group about, came into effect. And many of those laws, even though many of them have been rescinded, many of them are still on the books today, and the damage that they caused is still out there. So it wasn't until FDR came along where you started seeing black people transition from being solid Republicans, which is why Republicans oftentimes would win, but from being solid Republicans to moving over to Democrats. And then the final switch from Republican to Democrat happened in the early 70s after Richard Nixon, because he partnered with the Dixiecrats, who were the racist white people and of Trump and DeSantis and Abbott's ilk today. And they went for that Southern strategy, which again turned on blacks. And that's when blacks, because you only have two major parties, the only place they had to go, because many of the pro-South segregationists were Dixiecrats and became Republicans, left the Democratic Party, not all, but most of them left the Democratic Party and joined the Republican Party, and black people said, oh, no. Well, there were still many black people who still carried on that tradition, though they didn't vote solid Republican because they had always been registered as Republicans and believed in the idea of the Party of Lincoln, which unfortunately no longer existed, nor does it exist today. That is why people like Colin Powell, my aunt, and other members of my family of that generation were Republicans. That is another example, Sister Rashi, of why history, social studies, yes, and science is so important. And the teaching of values is partly why we have the free American education system. That is why it's so important, because when you don't have that, it's so easy for people to tell lies. And then they just tell the lies over and over again until they tell these lies so many times and through such a protracted period of time that people believe them because they have nothing else to base truth on. So I just wanted to make sure that we understood that when Colin Powell transitioned earlier in this week, there was another set of shoes left at the door of life that had the exit sign on it. But not just shoes. These were shiny, well-worn combat boots, and they were big boots, just like the other big shoes that were left by Elijah Cummings, by John Lewis, and so many others. There's another pair of shoes at the door. They're empty. These are combat boots. They belong to Colin Powell. The problem is, we're starting to leave so many shoes and now combat boots at the door, and these shoes are so large and we tend to be so small that we don't have feet to fill these shoes to continue to march of American progress to create a greater union, which has been perpetuated by black people in this country. That's who Colin Powell was. That's who Colin Powell is. And that is the person that I shed a tear for, because he is one of the last great military leaders that we have of note. And he is one of the last true American patriots that we have. When I watch the show that comes on every year that was co-hosted by Colin Powell, it's Salute to the Troops, it just won't be the same, because this time they'll be talking about Colin Powell, who is often the narrator of other greats.
I wanted to hit on something there, especially Galashi and all you other war-fearing, war-hating people out there in the world. We don't just do things blindly. You know, as Brother Rodney just said, we don't just say orders blindly. They have to be lawful. They have to be moral. We don't just go over there and shoot up the babies because someone tells us to go shoot up the baby. That's not what we do. There's rhyme and reason. And unfortunately, in the world in which we live, we need those who are willing to stand on the wall, you know, in the rain, in the cold, in the heat, in the coolness. There are those who have to stand on the wall in order to protect us against those who are willing to come over the wall and take our freedoms. And that is true. You know, it's a sort of quote directly from a few good men. Was it A Few Good Men? Was that A Few Good Men? I think it was A Few Good Men. With what's the boy named Tom Cruise? Yeah. And Jack Nicholson. But it's the God's honest truth. You need those men and those women to stay on the wall to protect all of us at night and during the daytime, because things can pop off on that. And General Powell, I'm sorry, Secretary Powell, was one of those men. You know what I'm saying? So we thank him for his service, and our condolences to his family as they go through this, their mourning, without a doubt. You know what I'm saying? Roxy, is there anything you want to say?
I don't mean to derail us. And yes, I personally posted. He's a fence person to me. It's that love-hate relationship, to me, are some of the best relationships. It's the same I have with W.E. Du Bois. It's very much like what I have with Booker T. Washington. And to some extent, Frederick Douglass was a love-hate. To learn of him was love-hate for me. What I wanted to ask y'all about is if y'all saw that down in Haiti, they done kidnapped some Americans and they want $17 million. And I want to know how much of that y'all willing to cash out the kidnappers to get our Americans back.
No, that's white folk. We ain't putting no money on them. They kidnap black folk. They know they ain't getting no money. That's why they leave us alone. It's the truth. The God's honest truth. Tell me the last time you, the sister from Texas that was in the reserves, they caught her, they put her on tape, you know what I'm saying? They ain't get no money for her. Kidnap a new man, I'm like, nah, we'll kidnap the black folks. We got kidnap the white folks, we'll give them money, man. They ain't get no money for no black folks. They kidnap white folks. And we ain't giving no new money. Right now, somewhere.
Do you think they're going to buy those white people back from Haiti?
Hell no. Right now, somewhere, some team is mobilized. Some folks will be, what's today, Saturday? Some folks will be home by Monday.
What you mean?
Trust
what
I tell you. Especially if they have some influence. If they have some influence, some folks will be home by Monday. Wednesday at the latest. They may keep them a couple of days to debrief them. Wednesday at the latest. I'm supposed to be home in no time. We don't negotiate with terrorists. That's a rule. We do not
negotiate. Sorry, can you say that louder? I couldn't hear you.
We, as a government, do not negotiate with terrorists. That is a rule. Now, if those folks have influence, a team has been mobilized, and they'll be on by Monday, Wednesday at the latest. If they have no influence, then Jesse Jackson will be on a plane. If he's feeling well, Al Sharpton, somebody will be on a plane to negotiate their release. But it will not be an official United States government operative. It's not going to happen like that. The United States government has a very strict policy with that. We do not negotiate with terrorists at all. Never had, never will.
But wait, we didn't got our folks back before. How do we get our folks back if we don't negotiate with terrorists?
A team has been mobilized. I don't understand what you ain't getting about what I'm saying.
A team that we mobilize negotiates with terrorists.
No, Rashi. A special forces team, Rashi, is mobilized, moves in, kills the kidnappers, and gets our people back. That's what happens. That's what happens, Rashi.
I'm about to hang up.
Jesus. Ooh, Lord have mercy. You got it there? You get it? That's what happened.
Okay, I'm sorry for making it a hammer and nail situation. Sorry.
That's if those kidnapped have influence. If they do not have influence, that's when they send Jesse Jackson or former president, what's the boy's name? Is still alive? Not Ford, but what's
Carter?
Carter, yeah. Carter will get on the plane or somebody like that is getting on the plane. But they will say the first words out of their mouth is, I am not here in official capacity. That's the first words out of their mouth. Because they're not. The United States government does not negotiate with terrorists. That is a
Dennis Rodman went to North Korea.
There you go. Right. Exactly. When Dennis Rodman went to North Korea. Exactly. Same difference. Dennis Rodman was not speaking on behalf of the official capacity of the United States government. He was not. That's not what we do. We either kill people or we send somebody else in. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Normally we kill them though. Just so you know. Just so there's no misconfusion. Normally we kill them. Yes, Rashi, that's normally.
You know,
that's normally what happens. Like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you were saying that, it reminded me of the conversation my daughter was having with somebody, and she was saying, "Well, it's unfortunate that these people are black, but they're
right.
about to be dead black people because
right.
you know we're not going to even attempt to negotiate with black people." And it's so funny that you use that phrase that you use. You say, yeah, there's a team that's there already surveying the area and developing
yeah.
plans. And again, that if these people are considered valuable by the United States.
Right.
Now, I am hoping that there's somebody from Haiti that lives in America that has connections down there that seem to be brothers and letting them know that you can have the potential of a long life
right.
by letting these white
right.
people go. Or they need to get their voodoo death rituals completed ASAP.
No, they need their GoFundMe account set up. Like, set your GoFundMe account set up with your surviving relatives because, you know, it's going to be a very short weekend for you, dog. Like, come on, man. Look, stuff like this happens. All of a sudden, plane tickets get bought. You know, average looking white dude just shows up at the airport. Like, hold on. Then a couple more show up. Then a couple more show up. Then a couple more show up. You know, they start hanging out together. And come on. You seen the movies? It's not that far from reality.
That's how it happens. Like,
it'll be okay, Iris. Everything will be okay. Remember that?
You know. Hey, look, a fast boat comes over from the DR. Some dudes swimming. Hey, swim out.
Now, I feel sorry for Haiti. I do feel sorry for Haiti because Haiti was a rich country when Dessalines and Bookman, when they defeated the Napoleon Bonaparte and the French, which also led to the doubling or tripling of the size of America because the French,
Louisiana Purchase.
That's right. Napoleon was such a racist that he didn't want to be defeated by a black person. And white people at the time in Haiti were calling Toussaint Louverture the new Alexander the Great. And Napoleon didn't like it. And it just goes to show the focus that people have on blackness. Napoleon was so fixated on defeating black people and not being defeated by black people that he really squandered his opportunity to be emperor of the world. Because had he not drained his coffers trying to defeat those former slaves, had he not done that, he wouldn't have had to make that really great deal for Jefferson in selling him Louisiana territories that were part, you know, became the Oklahoma territories, the wilderness as they called it back then, that doubled or tripled the size of the United, what was to become the United States. That happened because of that black man. That happened because of racism. That happened because of white supremacy. And I was trying to think, have the French won a war since then? But what they did do was they forced Haiti to pay them reparations. As much as white people talk about, nah, we're not paying no reparations, reparations have been paid many a time. And the country that was enslaved was forced to pay the country that enslaved them reparation. And America played a role in this too, because remember, the French helped America in the Revolution, and we've never forgotten that. I think that was like the last time the French won a war was when they helped us in the Revolution, and when we helped them once again in WW1 and WW2. The reality of Haiti would be a rich nation today had the European powers not depleted Haiti of its resources after Haiti depleted a world power of the day, France and Spain, of their resources, and noticed that Spain and France became lesser powers because of their confrontation with these former slaves. So, again, the power of black people and black history that's not taught in schools, which give people false perceptions of the realities of today. History is important.
Yeah, I mean, without that, because there's no real reason that's ever mentioned that I recall for the Louisiana Purchase. It was just like, oh, the French just decided one day to sell us some. Okay. And you leave it at that. But once you learn that that was caused by the conflict in Haiti, the war in Haiti, and the slave rebellion in Haiti, it's like, oh, so this little island of black folk was beating the hell out of the French and caused them to sell all this land to the Americans? They gangster. But where do you learn that? You know, damn sure ain't in school.
I think they asked too little. They should have ran the numbers from what the Clintons stole, run the numbers from them other NGOs running through there, raping them little Haitian girls, and all them two big Catholic priests they sent after the third time to get caught with their little baby. They sent them to Haiti to run game and put their holy praying hands on them little Haitian babies. Well, tally the shit up. Tally it up for real. And then don't even bother asking for the money. Just chop them damn heads off. And let's move on, because they keep running through there, running, cooking the books on Haiti. They done cooked Haiti's books so many times that they couldn't climb their way out of their shit if they had two more revolutions. They won't be left alone. We're not talking about people who got bored and decided, you know what would be fun? Let's play a kidnap video game. No, these are hurt people. And, yeah, they about to hurt some people. Keep playing with them. And they, yeah, they're hurt. I done seen it firsthand. Haitians don't take no whole bunch of games like that. They tired of people coming through with, they supposed to have, what was that endowment the Clintons was supposed to run down on them? They built 10 houses for $30 million. Or some shit like that. Come on. You keep running game on people. You keep running through their psyche. You keep touching their children. You keep miseducating them, giving them no place on the global market. Haiti got plenty of resources. They still got that sugar cane popping. Don't nobody want to buy a Haitian sugar cane stick. Yeah. Give them their money. Get your white folks. All you superstar white folks out there, get your money, get that $17 million, send it over there. Go get your good luck, God-fearing white people they done kidnapped over there. And then keep sending the money until you just retributed some of the damage that the United States has been doing when we decided to join the French? It was like 17-something. In order to get that Louisiana Purchase down there, we went ahead and said, fuck Haiti for the Louisiana Purchase.
So, Lee, this show, I'm glad you touched on Colin Powell. I'm glad you all touched on what's going on in Haiti. I feel for the Haitians as a people, even more so because they're in this hemisphere. We have the power to help. It doesn't mean we need to go and take over, but we do have the power to help. And I wish that America's philosophy would be what it started out to be, and that's to do good and to constantly seek to improve. That's what it's, you know, to be a more perfect union. That means we're starting where we're starting, and it may not be the best place, but we are seeking to continuously strive to become better. And I would like for us to go back to that founding principle, because within that founding principle, it would be to abolish the concept premises, to abolish the ideology of whiteness, and to become the country that it said that it was going to be, where it embraced everyone, and no matter where you started out in life, you had an equal opportunity to achieve. And like I put into that post, that has never been the case in America. And if you think, oh, well, here's black people just whining about what they don't have, let's go to white women who didn't get the right to vote until after we got the right to vote, because they fought, we fought. And that's another mistruth. That's not a mistruth. That's another lie that's out there that we weren't willing to fight. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why we had more onerous laws in this country is because of the Haitian Revolution, because those Southern planters were scared that the same type of things that happened in Haiti that caused them to fight for their freedom. And let's keep in mind that it wasn't just Haiti that freed itself from servitude. The first time, I believe, in history that a enslaved people outside of the Bible had taken over the country. As a matter of fact, I think that's even including the Bible, that took over a country that they were formerly enslaved in. They didn't stop there. Some of those generals from Haiti went on to free other nations or help other nations in their fight, like Colombia, Argentina, and so on. I believe it was seven nations that the Haitians freed or helped free, the racist white supremacist Confederate Southerners were afraid that they were going to lose their property and their way of life, their culture. It wasn't about money. That was
what was their property,
of life.
Right?
Their property,
was their property,
the people
right?
that looked like you and I, you and black people, people of from the African diaspora. No matter what part of the world you're from, if you were black and from the African diaspora, you could become a slave in America. Oh, and by the way, if you were a white woman that fell in love or lust or combination with a black person, free or slave, enslaved, that white woman forfeited her right of freedom in this country. And by those onerous racist laws would be or could be put in servitude as a slave herself if she didn't give up her relationship with that black person, whether he was a free person or not. Yes, that is what we're talking about. So they were so afraid. There's even stories, and these are all, this is all in the history books. We were allowed to read them because, remember, they're trying to outlaw Frederick Douglass, Rosa Parks. They're trying to outlaw teaching that stuff. And so, of course, they've turned slavery into...
And if we can find books.
Well, yes. You know, when we talk about... We have our Red Dawn Reading Club, and one of the books that we're reading, starting to read, is 1984. Because 1984, I think it starts out with it's 1330 or something like that. Because there is no such... it's 13 o'clock. There we go. Well, there is no such thing as 13 o'clock. It just goes to show how warped things were. And we're living in a society today that is trying to warp it even more because of the lost cause that they're still fighting for. As a matter of fact, another book I'm about to read is called The South Won the Civil War. And they're trying to start another Civil War. I don't know if you heard about some more Boogaloo Boys were just sentenced for trying to start that Civil War. These are white people. They weren't Antifa, and they weren't Black Lives Matter, BLM, right? So we have to know these things, and we have to espouse these things, and we have to get those white people who say that they're not racist. I appreciate them saying it, but it's the action. It's the fruit that they bear that determines it, not just them saying it. I appreciate them saying it, but it's more than that. And I don't know if you all saw the article that came out this week on how the Proud Boys are attacking school boards and how they are aligning themselves and collaborating with anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers, anti-government, anti-taxers, anti-Americans, even people from foreign countries.
What are they proud of?
They're proud of the lost cause. They're proud of something that actually does not exist. They're proud of a lie. They're proud of fiction. That's why it cannot be his truth or her truth. It can only be the truth. It can only be what really happened. They still think that it was a just cause to fight for the state's right to own property, to own humans, even though this is a country that was founded because of the tyranny, allegedly, by the British Crown against them. I appreciate you all talking about it.
Not a caller here, but I have an interesting sports commentary. Is there any room for that?
I'm sorry. Did you say you have
It wasn't sports me. It's not me. It's not me.
Oh.
There is someone here who may be able to add some interesting sports commentary. I'm going to pass the phone and walk, not all the way away.
I'm about to pass out.
Few pages. Don't pass out, Lee. I told you it wasn't me. All right.
Okay. Is this your uncle?
This is my brother. He wanted to talk a bit about the divisiveness of the team last night where the two teammates decided to fight, you know, but get into an
Okay.
I wanted to talk about the altercation between our brothers yesterday that I was watching. I seen two of our prominent black brothers, Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard, get into it. And I just thought that that was a moment of separating who we are as a black race from each other, you know, especially in sports.
Okay. Well, first of all, brother, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother. My name is Akeem. By the way, I'm Rasheed's younger brother.
There you go, because she did a horrible job introducing you. That's just not how we do around here. But that's what I say. Say hello to Brother Rodney.
How you doing, Brother Rodney?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. As a matter of fact, I'm doing even better that you listened to what your sister was listening to and then chimed in to share your comments. So, Brother, first of all, tell me, what do you think about what happened? And then I'll share my thoughts.
Well, and I feel like it set us back as a race. We are already divided as it is, and sports is one of the only things that we have that's still pure, in my opinion, for African Americans. And I just feel like when you see on the sideline at each other's throats, you don't see that from you don't see white boys doing that to each other. You don't see Asians doing that to each other. You don't see Mexicans doing that to each other. We're the only race that will step on our own brother's neck or, you know, argue with our own brother or go against him without a cause, you know. So that just kind of bothers me, made me feel some type of way, especially we doing it in sports. It's already bad enough we have to deal with it in reality in the world, but now we got to deal with it in sports too. So it was just one of those things. I didn't like it.
Mm. Okay.
Rodney,
so,
you first.
Well, I don't know if you remember about the Negro Baseball League. There was a Negro Football League. Heck, there was a Negro Basketball League. If we even had our own golfers, right? And so there was a level of collegiality that was amongst black people that typically didn't allow for the behavior like that. But I forget the sports writer. He wrote a book several years ago. I think it was called the 40 Million Dollar Plantation.
$40 million Negro.
He was talking about black athlete, and you know, we get paid a lot of money, but what are we actually getting paid that money to do? And I would take you back to there was a movie, and if you haven't seen this movie, you know, you shouldn't allow your children to watch it probably, but there was a movie that starred Ken Norton, former heavyweight champion of the world, claimed to fame was beating Muhammad Ali, breaking his jaw. And Ken Norton starred in this movie, and it was a book before that, and I had read the book. And in the book, they took these Mandingo warriors, and the Mandingo is legendary in American society today, partly because of this book and partly because of the slave fights on the plantation. And they took these Mandingo warriors would be forced to fight themselves and be forced to fight other people while white slave owners looked on and waged bets, right? And then we moved that up to boxing, where we had Jack Johnson become the first black heavyweight champion of the world. And ever since then, there have been great white hopes to defeat Jack Johnson and to defeat Muhammad Ali and everybody else that was black. That's what's always happened. They've always wanted us to fight. They always wanted us to fight anybody but them. How about that? So I will say this. We should not allow them to characterize us, though, because we have some skirmishes amongst ourselves, which I don't endorse, but it does happen, and oftentimes it's set up to happen that way. I don't support it. But we should not let them cause us to indict in our entire race of people because of what two people do. I know that that's what happened.
But Brother Rodney, they're on camera. Millions. Tens of millions of people are watching these players, you know. So it's not like two bums, not like two drunk men having a fight in the back of a bar. It is two two men on the same team sowing seeds of dissent on camera for the rest of the world to watch.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And again, I'm from the generation that said black people have to be at least twice as good. We have to be at least twice as good a behavior. If we go to someone's house or place of business, their house should be cleaner when we left and when we got there, regardless of its condition.
Mm-hmm.
If we went to a business, the business should be better off and more productive simply because I was there. So I'm with you. And I'm also from the generation that says, never let white people see us fight publicly. Even Dr. King and the civil rights leaders, when they had these disagreements, they handled, and they did have disagreements, Dr. King and James Farmer with the Deacons of Defense, with Ralph Abernathy, they had disagreements, but they took care of those disagreements like gentlemen, which were getting away from gentlemen and gentleladies in today's society. They took care of those disagreements in private, and then they came out unified in public. And to your brother's comment, I do believe that in the eyes of the general public, because that's how we're conditioned, it does set us back. And some of those elder players, I hope will get a hold of, well, they're not young people nowadays, but will get a hold of those younger people to them and remind them, kind of like in Black Panther. Remember when Killmonger was beating Black Panther? And or was it Killmonger, when M'Baku was beating Black Panther and the Queen Mother, Ramunda, said, show them who you are? Well, I think that we have to get back to kind of what Lee started out the discussion with in communications, right? And we have to remind our children and some adults on who we really are. And that does not identify who we are. That's who they have made us to be. And I do reject that. But I also caution us into putting undue burdens on us, as others do, that when one or two people do things that they shouldn't do, that we then demonize all of us because of them. Yes, it does happen, and it shouldn't happen, but we have to educate our people, and then we have to have community standards.
I want to get in because we only have like 7 minutes and change left. I want to say, let's not forget too that hockey exists. And in the game of hockey, white folks are going at one another right and left, left, right. That's why they don't let no real bros be on the hockey team, because, you know, you can fight in hockey. If you with some real bros out there, ain't no goals going to be scored. Just they just out there skating, just like, oh, I'm just waiting. Like Cedric the Entertainer didn't lie. He's like, that's why you don't put no real bros in no skate. They ain't got no sticks or no nothing. They just looking to hit somebody. So, you know, it's not just basketball. It's not just football. I mean, if you look at football, you'll see Tom Brady come off as the bad play. He'll yell, scream, get in people's faces, yada, 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 yada. That's been seen numerous times. He's not the only quarterback that does that. Other quarterbacks do the same thing. Baseball, not so much as, you know, because I don't know the culture of baseball, but when it comes to the dugout, but, you know, some cats will yell, scream, blah, 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 but you just don't see that too much in baseball. You see the guys just go to the other end of the bench, and that's about it. This particular case, you know, look, man, you have, and a contradict what Rodney just said, these cats are still young. And that's one of the problems, that letting them come in the league too dang early. So now you get these cats in the league when they're 19, 18 years old, because now they only have to be 1 year in college. So they're 18, 19 years old, maybe 20, and they're coming in the league, and they're making millions and millions and millions of dollars. So here you go. You come in, you're one of the lottery picks, right? You're supposed to be Ben Simmons. You're supposed to be the man. You come to your team, you play well for a season. Next season, you got a little slump. That third season, you come out, boom, boom, boom. You know, team is trying to build around you. So specifically with LA, They're trying to build around LeBron. LeBron's been in the league for a very long time. But now everybody wants a super team because LeBron did it. So now to get now it's not only you, it's Westbrook, it's Kyrie, it's this cat. So now everybody now is a superstar that's on the team. So where's your shine go? Understand these children now, man. It goes back to where we started at. These children are all about the likes and the shares. Instagram, Snapchat. They just want the love. They want what they perceive to be the love and appreciation. Again, those are likes and shares. Everything they do, they want it to be seen. Ah, who does that? Not going down that tangent right now. Not going down that hole. But so now all these other cats come, they take your shine away. So, you know, it's like, yo, just give me the conversation that could have happened on the sideline. Yo, just give me the ball. I want to score. Holla, you got too many shots already, son. I'm trying to get mine, too. Holla, son, you just trying to make it the sports center. Oh, I ain't trying to make it a sports center. I just want us to win. Oh, no, fuck that. You've been on sports center 3 times this week. Blah, 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 blah. I'm trying to get on sports center, too. This is the attitude that happens. I mean, you can only imagine what these cats are saying to themselves. You know what I'm saying? But, again, nobody's about the team. They're all about the individual victories. They want to be – they want to make the top 10 plays on sports center. They want to be mentioned on the gram. They want to be seen on Snapchat. Whatever. Come on, man. All these young kids, they have no control of their emotions. Look at how young people behave just in general, without the money. They don't have no control of their emotions. They don't know how to act. As soon as you say something to them, they want to blow out, blow off. What do you think happens when you amplify that by tens of millions of dollars? That's what happens. And some folks are going to say, look what happens when we get them jungle monkeys that money. See how they behave? Ain't no different. You know, so hopefully some of the older players will pull these cats to the side. Like, yo, you need to chill. You know, this is where the game misses a Kobe Bryant. This is where you hope Michael Jordan steps out of his supreme shell and comes out and be like, yo, let me holler at you for a second. This is where you need a Magic Johnson more involved in the organization. But remember, the organization pretty much threw Magic out because Magic wasn't having that crap. The organization pretty much kicked Magic out a year or two, well, 2-3 years ago. Remember that? They pretty much put Magic to the side. But you need a James Worthy. You need a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You need someone who knows about that Lakers legacy to come back and grab these cats. Like, yo, I don't know what y'all doing, but that's not how we do it around here. That's what they need. And hopefully, that's what they'll get. Sadly, most of them may not listen. But the job is to give the information, and hopefully they are willing, able, and ready to receive it. All right, bro? Well, look, family, we'll start with Rashi. You got any closing comments, sister?
Go to your history to erase the mystery. That's my new adopted slogan. Study your history.
I like that.
So that you can erase the mystery. Thank you, Asa Harriet, Wade Noble, all and all at all.
That's right. Brother Rodney?
Just to remind everybody that the first professional hockey players were of African descent.
Yep. Look, I want to shout out my sister. She was in a very bad car accident last week, Friday. She's home now. She's getting better. I'm glad that she's getting better, but she's still a pain. All right, good Lord. And she's my little sister, too, so you know, yo. She killed me. She lives in Pittsburgh. Oh, I need you to come get a hug. I need that. Oh, my God. I'm so much happier when she was in the hospital under medication that she couldn't bother me as much. Love you, babe. Hey, you all be good. You all be safe. Until next week, we'll see you then. We have a show coming up in a couple of weeks, Rodney, the show, we got the sister coming back, and we're looking
November
forward to having
6th. November 6th. Professor Cosgrove and a couple of others will be on the show to talk about the 1898 Wilmington insurrection and how it correlates directly to the 1-6 insurrection and how it literally changed the direction of this country and the South. November 6th.
All right. Peace, family.